Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, Canada's first online financial news and research service, providing insider news and knowledge to investors. His website, CanadianInsider.com, home of the Canadian Insider Club. You can find him on X at Ink Research. Welcome back to the show, Ted.
Jim, thanks for having me back, and thanks for everybody tuning in.
Has the stock market paid enough attention to what's happening in the Middle East right now?
I don't think so. The market has kind of rolled over a bit, and there could be a number of factors behind it. I mean, certainly the increased geopolitical tensions have probably had an effect. However, I think that the risk surrounding where we're at right now in the Middle East crisis is quite high. And not just the stock markets, I think, that are have to get their heads around this. The currency and the bond markets also have to get their heads around this. And we put out a report on Monday. It was our October gold report and mining report called Middle East Crisis, Hostages, and a Fed Held Captive. And basically what we started by taking a look at what happened in the Iran hostage crisis back in 1979. And, you know, interestingly, a number of your listeners will recall that, though some may not, back in 1979, the Shah of Iran, who was an ally of the U.S., basically was overthrown, and he went into exile. Ayatollah Khomeini came to lead the Islamic Republic. And in November of 1979, the U.S. Embassy was stormed, and a number of hostages were taken. And this crisis went on for 44 days. And what was interesting is it went into 1980, and that was the last year of Jimmy Carter's presidency. And where are we at with this current Middle East crisis? We're almost at the same point on the calendar, you know, in terms of the presidential cycle with Joe Biden. So this is coming at a time when usually the last year of the presidential cycle of a president's term is not all that great for the stock market in the U.S. And now we've got this geopolitical crisis that's happening as well. And it really is a geopolitical crisis. I know there's a lot of... I mean, I see this on the financial streams on Twitter. People still want to talk about the Fed, and they want to talk about, oh, well, you know, the GDP number's coming out. I go, look, you know, like the Fed is kind of held hostage here as well by not only the geopolitical events, but when you look at what's happening with the money center bank stocks in the U.S., some of the biggest banks are trading at 52-week lows. They're trading, Jim, lower than when they traded during the Silicon Valley Bank crisis in the spring. So there's something under the hood in the U.S. banking system that nobody can really put their finger on. But, you know, this reminds me of, you know, kind of what Europe went through last decade, where you had all the banks kind of, struggling and could never get their share price to rally, and everybody was wondering, you know, will Deutsche Bank go bankrupt? Well, Deutsche Bank never went bankrupt, but for a decade, people were talking about it, and that to me suggests that we're probably not in an uber bullish period for the U.S. stock market. You know, we're probably not in an uber bullish period for the U.S. dollar, because how can the Fed continue to raise rates when too big to fail bank shares are struggling? Like, nobody has answered that question for me. The only people who I've heard address it intelligently come to the conclusion that the Fed cannot be raising rates here, right? And yet you'll go on, you'll hear on business televisions, you know, people getting, well, maybe the Fed's going to, 25% chance the Fed's going to raise rates. I'll tell you what, as we put in this report, the Fed raised rates in July. We didn't think they would. They did. Take a look at what happened to Bank of America stock since then. I mean, we put the chart in the report. It's gone elevator down, okay? So, yeah, is the Fed going to raise again? Go for it. Go crazy. Go raise another 100 basis points. Let me go, right? Like, no, the Fed cannot raise rates anymore. And if they raise rates again, well, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, I think that given the risks around the geopolitics, I mean, just read briefly a social media company who is, I'm not going to mention their name. They're not one of the big five, or the, you know, they're not part of the Magnificent Seven, but they're still, in my view, extremely well valued for the revenues and the profits that they generate, i.e. they don't generate. But they said, well, you know, we had some hesitation with our ad customers right when this October 7th massacre hit, when Hamas did a terror attack on Israel, and it will impact. If this drags on, it will impact investors, consumer and investor psychology. We don't know how much. I'm not making a prediction, but if investors are assuming that the base case is this will just play in the background, kind of like, you know, some kind of civil war in Africa, I think they're going to be mistaken, right? Like there are a lot of hot wars going on there, but they're in smaller areas of the world. Unfortunately, it's horrible for the people involved, but, you know, they don't involve major stakes by major players in the world. Israel, big stakes involved with the United States, other NATO bloc countries, and Iran, right? So there are big stakes involved with this conflict, and that's going to involve the U.S. having to allocate. The longer it goes on, the U.S. is going to have to allocate more money. That means they're going to have to borrow more. Look, Joe Biden's asking for another over $100 billion in more spending, while $60 billion of that is supposed to go to Ukraine. But a good chunk of that's going to go to Israel. That's just this year. What about next year? You know, so this conflict should be concerning to those who are looking to buy U.S. dollars as a way to protect oneself from these events, because the U.S. government is probably going to have to keep spending here, and it's going to have to keep replenishing its military base, not only to help Ukraine, but now also to help Israel, but also to defend its own forces in the Middle East, where they have a significant presence still. There are bases all throughout the Middle East, and they have a large naval, there's always a large naval presence there. So this all costs money, and that will have to come from the bond market. So I am not at all convinced that that the bond market is going, that the U.S. treasuries are going to benefit as a safe haven. I think that's needs to be a question, that assumption. What should do okay is gold. And the reason, one reason why I say that is if you look at our report, our top mining report from October, we put a chart in there how the U.S. dollar behaved during the Iran hostage crisis. And initially it fell. And then Paul Volcker started hiking rates, and it went back up. And Paul Volcker cut, and it went back down. And then Paul Volcker hiked again, and it went back up. And then Ronald Reagan, it became clear that he was going to win the election, and the dollar went up. because there was a combination of higher interest rate and the perception of a new, stronger president was coming in, and he was vowing to, decisively take care of this issue as soon as he got in. And so, I mean, it was all posturing by Reagan, as it turned out, but it worked, because minutes after he became president, the hostages were released. So this time around, though, as I mentioned, the Fed will not be able to raise rates because the banks are telling him, do not raise rates unless you want to have some big problems here, right? I mean, that's kind of what these bank shares are screaming at the Fed, right? And so, maybe they'll go ahead and raise rates again. Like, go for it, Jay. Like, go for it. Like, let's see what happens. I don't think they're that, blind to what's going on. And I think, sure, there's a lot of pundits on Wall Street who get paid to talk about things like this and assess what's going on. And a lot of this chatter about the Fed, will the Fed raise rates or not raise rates, it's based off of these market probabilities that are implied. But those probabilities are driven by transactions in the market that are put on for a whole host of reasons. A lot of it is hedging. A lot of it is asset liability management. Okay. And some of it is just like passive, right? So yes, those market-based implications of the Fed maybe is going to raise 25% chance or 33% chance, it's all basically noise. It changes every day. So I think one has to sit back and look, what's the big picture here? We have a geopolitical crisis that's going to, unless it gets resolved, it's going to put more stress on the U.S. budget. It's going to also play off in the background where you've got some of the largest banks in the United States that are having to deal with this higher rate environment, and it's not treating them very well. So the ability of the Fed to even bring in a higher rate environment than they have now is constrained. That should put a limit on the U.S. dollar euphoria here. I know there's a group of traders. They're just like dying to take the dollar yen above a dollar 150. Go for it, and we'll see what happens. But Japanese government, the Bank of Japan, they still have negative interest rates. That's just another kind of story that we could talk about, we won't go down that rabbit hole. But that will come to an end, I expect, soon. If they don't hurry up and get back to normal, they may miss their window. But I think it's pretty clear that the Japanese public has had enough of this experiment. The Kishida government lost the by-election on the weekend, so they're starting to feel the impact of this powerful Bank of Japan easing that's driving up inflation, and it's not very politically popular. So the days of this ultra-loose Japanese monetary policy are numbered. Now, I don't think they're going to 5% like the Fed. Maybe they'll go from ultra loose to just loose, but the trend will be pro-yen and not pro-dollar. But, there's still a bunch of traders who just, are dying to try and push, test the Japanese Ministry of Finance and see if they'll come in and intervene. This will play out in the next few weeks, but eventually the Bank of Japan will have to get its rates off of zero, I believe. So, I think that, look, you never say never. The dollar, there is a scenario where the dollar could strengthen, and, the U.S. economy is doing quite well, but we can get into that in a second. There's a big caveat there as to why it's doing so well. But, the economy is doing well. If the geopolitical situation is resolved quickly, let's hope it is, well, that would be dollar positive. And it would be positive for the Biden administration, to kind of work its way out of this mess. And it'd be positive for all of us because look at all the people that are being killed. I mean, it's terrible what's going on there. So let's hope for a quick resolution. I mean, it wouldn't, the gold price would probably, wouldn't get a tailwind, but it's got other tailwinds. This banking issue is not going away anytime soon. But, for humanity, it would be great to get this issue resolved. But it's going to be tough. There's a lot of big power blocks that have lots of interest on the line here. It's going to be a very difficult situation, I'm afraid, over the next few weeks.
We'll have more with Ted Dixon right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Ted Dixon. Ted, Inc. Research came out with their mining and crypto report. Well, what does the mining report tell us?
Right. Well, the mining area is the area where, in North America, where insiders are the most upbeat. Now, like I'm sure, again, like many of your listeners can relate, they've been waiting a long time for the mining group to bounce back sustainably. You know, and again, you know, we had the Fed, they're raising these rates, they're making it even harder to build mines. They're just, in my view, just delaying the inevitable price surge of commodities when, you know, gee, we try to, you know, we're building all these battery factories with government money, and, you know, we just don't have the NATO block mines available to provide the minerals, and you know that's eventually the demand is going to meet supply. You know, higher demand is going to meet constrained supply, and we're going to have a squeeze. But when will that be? I don't have a prediction on that. But you know, insiders are certainly positioned for that eventuality. So we will have, you know, again, we will have to see. But The energy insiders have been taking money off the table for, I think, good reason, in that, you know, there is a downside. Has the Fed, if the Fed has over-tightened and the U.S. does move into a recession, that would not help the oil price. You could just, you know, see kind of stagnant demand. And the fact of the matter is, I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying that's a risk. A lot of these insiders have made a lot of money in the oil patch with their stocks going up, taking some money off the table when you've got this geopolitical risk and this economic risk. You know, it makes a lot of sense from their perspective. Everybody has different risk situations and risks to manage. And the benefit of energy, of course, is that it has the potential, because sometimes that doesn't always work out the way you expect, but if commodity prices do start to rise and energy prices do rise again on the back of geopolitical tension, well, then the energy group can give you a hedge on that. But it's more of a, I would say, a hedge than, you know, than something you're going to necessarily going to bet on for a big growth opportunity here after the run it's had. Now, everyone will have their different views on the path of the oil price and the natural gas price. And, you know, this crisis that we're in the Middle East, I've heard an eloquent case that it's positive over the medium term for natural gas. So, you know, there are some fundamental issues to work through. But certainly over the sort of the medium term, from our signals, we continue to see that the mining group has been underloved. There's been underinvestment, and that's where a good bulk of the opportunity is. But it's very, as you know, Jim, and your readers know, you know, mining is a very difficult business, and it's very risky mine by mine, and so it's a tough business to invest in. That's why you need a diversified approach, of course, and you know, we like to follow what the insiders are doing in that space, and they have a lot of conviction in the area. So we will see if how Q4 plays out here. Certainly, we got some good news out of China, which was a surprise just over the past 24 hours, with news that the Beijing the federal government is going to increase its budget deficit from 3% to 3.8% for this year, and that's part of it is to help with the recovery. And also, there was you know, there were some floods. That require areas that need to be rebuilt. So that's a positive. That's a surprise. They don't usually lift their budget deficit ceilings late in the year. So that could provide some support to the mining group. going into next year. So that's a small bit of sort of upbeat news that that the group has had in this, you know, over the shadow of this geopolitical situation and the Fed raising rates. And, you know, Jim, you know what's really interesting, right? Is the Chinese, they're raising their budget deficit to GDP ratio to 3.8. Well, the U.S. for the last fiscal year was looking at, it's like 6%, Jim, and it was 6.3%. That, you know, so yes, the U.S. economy is growing, but it's all being driven by debt, government fiscal debt, right? I mean, we don't know what the GDP numbers are coming in expected to be hotter than expected. Well, yeah, but it's all being driven by the federal deficit. So, you know, it's kind of a mirage here, right? And again, you know, I keep hearing this bullish dollar mantra. Oh, everything is so strong in the U.S. Well, it's kind of being run like a bit like a massive hedge fund, right? I mean, they're borrowing to, you know, to kind of do these industrial policy investments, and they're going to beef up going to spend more money on defense, which, you know, which helps boost part of the economy. But it's all being driven by debt. So this is not a cycle that I think is sustainable. So again, this comes back to, you know, I think we've said this, we think the dollar's peaked here against gold and even against a lot of its competitors, its fiat competitors. When we came out and we said that, you know, we reiterated our view at the end of September, you know, we didn't get a lot of support. No one was kind of jumping on our bandwagon. But you know, the dollar index did peak the next week so far. Now look, you know, maybe again, I tried to give an overview of the bullish case for the dollar a little earlier. It could play out. You know, you always have to be humble in this game. Your assumptions don't always, you know, pan out. You're lucky if they pan out 51% of the time. But again, if the banking area was doing fine, I'd be a lot more optimistic about the case for a stronger dollar. I just don't see how the Fed can support the dollar much longer, and we will see. So, some good news out of China for the mining group. A little bit of good news. You know, the dollar kind of let's just saying, you know, plateauing here. Perhaps good chance that gold could finally make a move beyond its all-time high. Let's keep fingers crossed. That could set up for a surprising Q4 here for the mining group. You know, let's see. And those would be the tailwinds that would help it. But of course, we live in this world of uncertainty, and you never know. Maybe the Fed will continue to hike rates no matter what, and put us all into a, you know, throw the dice and risk having a major global recession, and then that would not be good for either for resource stocks across the board. So one has to brace themselves for any policy error that may come along.
What's going on with cryptos?
Yeah, well, they bounced this week, and off of speculation that the U.S. would finally get an ETF that holds Bitcoin. We've had these in Canada for some time, but for whatever reason, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission has not approved those in the U.S. There are some crypto ETFs, but they only hold exposure to the futures markets. So there was some excitement, you know, and I think that there's a group of investors who may see a crypto as an alternative to the U.S. dollar. I went through that roller coaster with crypto in the last, you know, bull market, and I haven't seen the. I'm a big fan of crypto per se in terms of its promise. You know, we actually accept Litecoin payments for Canadian Insider. You can join Canadian Insider using Litecoin. It's actually a lot cheaper than using your credit card. It's like one Litecoin to join us. But, you know, most people prefer to use their credit card. And why is that? Well, because it's really hard to use Litecoin. And it's used for a transaction. You have to have an account. You have to go get it. There's only a few exchanges now in Canada that offer it. You know, it's hard. And I haven't seen the on-ramps, you know, the ease of use improve over the past 2 years for most crypto applications. I know there's a lot of people working on it, and there's a lot of really smart, hardworking people in the business trying to improve it. But look, the regulators have been trying to basically shut it down, and it's just very, very hard for the average customer to use it. So while I'm a big believer in its potential, I don't think it's quite there yet, and I hope I'm wrong. Like, I hope, you know, I hope there's some innovations that have, like, kind of gone under my radar screen here that are out there that will pop up. But until that happens, I think it's going to be hard for crypto to get a lot of attraction. Now, you know, once the Fed starts cutting rates, that's a different ball game. Once they start reinflating, or if they start doing, you know, more asset purchases to pump money into the financial system, that's a completely different ball game. Crypto could get a speculative bid. But right now, today, you know, a Bitcoin ETF, well, you know, we already have a gold ETF, right? So, like, to have a store of value, it's kind of like, well, you know, we already have gold. Yeah, it's good to have another one. Bitcoin, sure, and I get all the properties for Bitcoin, and I think it's great. But you know, I in terms of it really kind of taking off here at this point, with the Fed still in its current interest rate posture, still trying to take money out of the financial system. You know, I think it's going to be a tough slog, but I'm glad to see Bitcoin rallying. I'm glad to see it, you know, regaining its footing, because I think it's good. I think we need a strong crypto, a strong crypto market to keep encouraging people to do the innovation, right? They need to be able to see light at the end of the tunnel, that this is all going to work out and they are going to be able to provide decentralized money that people can maintain their, you know, can transact in a way that they have more power over. So, no, I think it's good to see the crypto rallying, but how much far it goes, I mean, we'll just have to see. But I think a lot does, in the short term, depend on, you know, whether the Fed kind of backs off here or not. If they start to back off, I think, you know, maybe you could see a nice bid under Bitcoin.
Ted, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Jim, thanks for having me back.
My guest has been Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, his website, CanadianInsider.com. If you have any questions for Ted or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.